And welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor today,
today is
Pape Machinery. Pape Machinery is our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. You can go up and see them at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. They have everything you ever wanted to see in John Deere. They got tractors, attachments, they got mowers, they got it all. Go up and see them or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
Well, let's see. Today is February 7th. I do have an announcement for next week. Heard from our friend Dr. Lyle Rapacki that he's going to come on and give us the next the update on what's happening with the Arizona voter fraud investigations, and I guess that's really heating up. Let's see, the fastest way for me to give you current information would be if you go to our website at wethepeopleradio.us. Go there, go to the February 14th show, and I have his E. Prescott News link on there, and he's posting videos like, I don't know, a lot, daily, sometimes a couple times a day, on what's happening. And I don't think it'll spoiler alert anything, because I'm sure by next week there will be a lot more. So, for those of you who've been waiting for the next installment is coming. I don't know. Today, it was actually last week, I got a hold of Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and because I made the mistake of watching a White House briefing, and, you know, they're going on and on and on about how global warming is the greatest, you know, national security threat we face. And
existential threat. get it right.
It's funny. Was that a Freudian slip? Did you say existential threat?
Yeah. at least I didn't incite an erection, so, you know. Yeah,
that's true. but all the Democrats did.
Yeah.
Good Lord. Anyway, they've decided that, you know, we don't have to worry about, you know, China or Russia or EMPs or, you know, any actual real nuclear armaments. I don't know. List goes on. But now we're going to sweat about the, you know, climate change situation. And I don't know. Part of me is kind of happy because they're just going to wander around like they did during the Obama administration, pat each other on the back and, you know, fly private planes to Davos. And
don't forget, we'll get a hold of James Taylor again and
get James Taylor over there to sing
us a tune. Sing Jimmy.
But at like basically the same time, Dr. Pry put out an article about the Russia EMP threat, and I thought, huh, that's an actual thing. Maybe we should talk about it so the world could remember that, you know, climate change really isn't our greatest threat. And we have had this is like our 15th show with Dr. Pry, which is pretty fun since back in 2017. And we love having him on because he's full of information. He is the executive director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, the director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum, just in case he thought, you know, he was just going to be making this stuff up. Both of those are congressional advisory boards. He served on the Congressional EMP Commission, Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, and the House Armed Services Committee. He was an intelligence officer with the CIA, responsible for analyzing Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy, hence the topic today. He has a PhD in history, another one in archaeology, history in archaeology, and another one in strategic studies, which is what led him to the CIA. He's also the author of numerous books, including The Power and Light, The Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America from 2001 to 2020, Apocalypse Unknown, The Struggle to Protect America from Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe, and Electric Armageddon. So they're kind of fun topics, and there's a whole bunch more, and I've listed them actually on the page for today. And today, just for the record, would be February 7th, 2021, in case we, you know, play the skin at another time, because most of these things are not necessarily time-sensitive. But anyway, that's the announcement portion of the program.
There you go. You did well.
I will now stop talking. So how was your snowstorm, Dr. Pry, over there in your global warming of Virginia?
Well, last week it was nice to have, because we so rarely get snow here. And so we had some snow last week, and enough so that it constituted a snow emergency in Virginia, which means that if you get more than 3 inches of snow on the ground, it's a snow emergency, you know, because basically most of localities and the Washington, D.C. area aren't prepared to cope with that amount of snow. And
We had snow the week before, and we had like 300 car accidents here in our town.
And then today we're going to be 70, 75. So
figure it out.
And it all melted away by Friday, but then this Sunday morning we got snow again.
Oh. You know?
So I always like to see some snow. I was raised in upstate New York, which is the snow belt, and you can get 2 feet of snow in a day. And so it was nice to see some snow.
Yeah, I was a kid in Connecticut, and we would have had no money if it wasn't for the snow and the leaves.
And since we started off talking about the weather, and I know you wanted to talk about climate change.
Well,
you
not
know,
really, but yeah.
Maybe we should start off talking about that.
Sure.
Because it is a pet peeve of mine. And, you know, one of my frustrations with President Trump was that while he understood that, you know, the climate change was a hoax, and on occasion, on a rare occasion, said so, he didn't say that often enough and didn't really use his administration to make the scientific case against climate change. And now it can be told, I understand, you know, from inside sources, the reason for that is that Ivanka is a climate change believer, or at least so I was told.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, to make her happy, to keep her happy, he didn't go in that direction. So that's unfortunate, you know, because the democracy is based on facts. And Republicans, only President Trump had the courage even to go as far as he did. You know, most Republicans don't have any courage at all. And they've been letting the Democrats get away with murder by implying that, I mean, the Republican argument is basically that, oh, it's too expensive to deal with climate change. You know, we have to think of other higher priority things like jobs and the like. And most people will agree and understand that. And even if you're going to argue that point of view, that alone is sufficient to overturn the draconian policies that the Democrats want to follow to pursue climate change. But the better argument is to attack them on the science, you know, because the Republican position always seems to concede the idea that climate change is real, that we really face some kind of crisis, and it leaves a false impression out there among the base, conservative people that there is something to be worried about there, and there isn't. There's no scientific basis for the idea that the Democrats was constantly that they won the presidency on that in 12 years, you know, we're going to face some kind of a climate crisis if we don't arrest carbon footprints now and revert, you know, to clean green energies that produce no carbon. That's simply not true. The only tiny shred of truth there is in their argument is, you know, that if you go back, that there is a slight warming. There has been a slight warming, but it's well within the norms of the kinds of fluctuations that happen with climate. And normally, warming is actually associated historically with good times. You know, if you go back in the record, for example, you know, there was a warming period when the Vikings were able to settle Iceland and Greenland, and they had bigger populations. You could actually do farming in Greenland at the time. You know, the Renaissance was a period of great productivity because there were more crops. But North American Indian tribes flourished, you know, during, these warming periods, all right? But it's not a catastrophic warming period, you know, where the poles are going to melt and the seas are going to rise, which doesn't even make any sense scientifically, and you can prove it to yourself with the ice cube experiment. You know, most of the water that's supposed to result from is the melting of the Arctic caps, okay? And the Arctic, the North Pole polar cap, because there's no land mass up there, it's floating on the sea, okay? And when ice is created, it has a larger volume and a lesser mass because it expands. Ice expands. It's one of the few things that expands instead of shrinking when it reaches freezing point. And because it expands, it actually has less mass than liquid water. you know. So if the North Pole, all of the Arctic Sea ice melted, it would have zero difference in terms of raising the sea levels. And you can prove this to yourself by putting an ice cube in a glass of water and drawing a line about where the water is, and then checking back after the ice cube is melted to see if the water level has risen. And you will find the water level is exactly the same, you know, because the amount of the volume that is displaced by the ice cube when it is floating in water, all right, it represents the amount of water that's going to be left in the glass when the entire ice cube melts.
I like it when there's like practical things like that that people can do. We have to take a really quick break, not because we have to run and get the ice cubes, although I really wish we had some because then I would go do it right now. But got to celebrate a little free market while we still have it here in Northern California, while we're still under the tyranny of Gavin Newsom. And hey, if you haven't done it already, go to recallgavin2020.com, print out the petition, and sign the recall. And then make sure you turn it in. That would be pivotal. You can't sign it online. You got to print it and turn it in. But they give you lots of places to do it. So if you're in California, jump in on the recall. It's going well. It's going so well, Gavin Newsom's worried about it. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
What shall we do about them? They move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start.
There we go. And we were having a little hate and discontent during the break there. Couldn't decide if I said 2020 or not. So it's recallgavin2020.com, just in case I left off the 2020, because that's kind of important. So recallgavin, G-A-V-I-N, 2020.com, if you live in California and you're listening to this before March the, I think it's 15th or so when it's up. Super important and really important to turn it into a collection site that's listed on that website, so the Secretary of State can't cook the books. Yeah. Not that that would ever happen in California.
Not in California.
No.
And they're pretty close to their goal, but they do need more help. So if you haven't, get out there and do it.
There's only five signing spots on a sheet, so sign it and find four other people. It's not that tough.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, that commercial message is over. I like the ice cube experiment. That's an easy one, and that's something anybody can do at home to basically kind of debunk the foolishness.
Well, unfortunately, President Biden hasn't conducted the experiment, and he is right about this. The president is right about this, and the Democrats are right that climate change poses an existential threat to our society. But it's because it's fake science, and they are engaged in policies that will pose an existential threat to our society in response to the non-threat that is climate change. During the break, an article just popped up on my screen here about Biden directs military to make climate change central to American national security. And they're quoting the new Secretary of Defense, Mr. Austin, Secretary of Defense Austin. I'm quoting him. Every year we see the consequences of increasing incidents of flooding, drought, wildfires, and extreme weather events on our installations at home. Every year our commanders and their allies and partners conduct operations that result from instability in society strained by desertification, the threat of adversary access to homelands through the Arctic, and demands for humanitarian assistance worldwide. We know firsthand the risk that climate change poses to national security because it affects the work we do every day. And that is just totally false. And Biden has directed his Secretary of Defense to place this non-existent threat at the center of our national security policy. And doing that does pose an existential threat. It's taking up enormously scarce resources, resources that we should be putting into the modernization of our nuclear weapons, upgrading our military critical infrastructures to be protected against super EMP weapons, protecting our civilian critical infrastructures from EMP, deploying space-based missile defenses, you know, all of these things, in an economy, because the economy is still tanking from the misguided responses to the COVID crisis. Defense dollars, defense budgets are going to be at best flat in the future. They're probably going to decrease as the Biden administration starts implementing its radical social and climate change policies, and that's going to eat into the scarce defense dollars to protect us from our adversaries. It has already had a really destructive effect on the NATO alliance, the climate change myth. People were always criticizing President Trump for taking the perfectly reasonable position that the NATO alliance should be paying its fair share of its own defense. Mm-hmm. People were saying, oh, that's going to endanger the NATO alliance. Obviously, it didn't endanger the NATO alliance, but it increased NATO's own defense spending by billions of dollars, something the Russians surely hated. But, you know, climate change canceled the effects of a lot of that, because one of the things people don't understand is why you may recall that President Trump was also against Germany building the Baltic natural gas pipeline to Russia, right? And the reason for that is because that was giving billions of dollars back to Russia that they could spend on their military. And it was also making the German energy systems, German electricity, and all their critical infrastructures dependent on Russia, so that Russia could turn off the heart of the European NATO alliance just by shutting off the natural gas pipelines. Why would Germany do such a suicidal thing? Why would they do it? The reason they had to do it, or the reason they did it, is because they believe in climate change. And they shut down all their nuclear reactors, in compliance with climate change, because they thought the nuclear reactors, and their coal-fired electric power plants as well, they saw these things as having too big a carbon footprint, and they were even though the nuclear reactors actually have the lowest carbon footprint of ever anything except hydroelectric stations, nonetheless, if it's nuclear, the green left hates it, and so they had to be shut down too. And Germany was getting most of its electricity from those sources, and so to make up for what they did to themselves as part of their climate change policy, Germany had to turn to Russia to get natural gas, which ironically does have a carbon footprint. So you can point. There's a clear and present danger from climate change right there. In the heart of the NATO alliance. Germany, which is close to being a frontline state, used to be a frontline state, but it's right behind Poland and the Czech Republic. The Fulda Gap is there. That's where the tanks are going to be rolling. And they have made themselves vulnerable. And President Trump saw that, because of this climate change fiction. The other thing is, all through our military, and the Republicans tolerated this, and they put up with this, even when they had dominated, when we had control of both houses of Congress and the White House, they didn't do anything to roll back and stop all these ridiculous, expensive reports, and scientific research, and to seek, for example, they were trying to find green ways of powering naval ships, and finding alternative fuels for naval ships that would have driven up the cost of powering an air, of powering the Navy and the Marines and the Army, you know, a thousandfold, you know, versus using. And all of this stuff is crippling our military and extremely costly, and we can't afford it. And in terms of the political process, you know, now once the Democrats took over the House, you know, we now actually have a climate change committee. There's a whole committee of Congress dedicated to climate change. So it's organic in the policy process. And, you know, and all of it is a fiction. So the argument that climate change is an existential threat to our country actually is true, but not because climate change is true. You know, it's because, you know, when you engage in such draconian, self-defeating, suicidal responses to something that isn't real, I mean, this is the problem. This is the kind of self-defeating, self-destructive consequences of a society that's not rational anymore, or at least political leadership that isn't rational and doesn't think logically and doesn't believe in facts. It's like what happens in 1984, right? You know, when you build public policy around a fiction, like the idea that there aren't two biological sexes, but really it's the 26 genders that matter. Same thing here, and it's, you know, this belief in hocus pocus and made up phony fictional things. It's really a religion, a secular religion that is fundamental, and it wouldn't be a bad thing if the secular religion were mostly grounded in truth, but it isn't. It's grounded
or they would nothing. Just they would just own up to it that it's a religion and stop inflicting it on public policy.
Right, and because it is inflicted on public policy, it's dragging all the rest of us down the drain with it. Mm-hmm. But I'll just wrap up the climate change discussion if we can, or unless
sure.
you want to continue it with, because I'd like to give the audience a couple of places to go to get real information on climate. One of them is a website called realclimatescience.org, realclimatescience.org, and there you will find most real climate scientists actually don't subscribe to the hysterical theories of the left. It is a lie that there's some kind of a consensus among climate scientists, you know, that that the global warming poses a catastrophic threat to the United States or to the world. And you will also discover that the so-called UN experts aren't experts at all, but they're actually lobbyists for Greenpeace and and Save the Earth and Save the Whales and the Natural Defense Resource Council and all these, you know, green environmental activist groups. You will find that they are so extreme that some of the people that founded some of these organizations are actually turned against them. Another excellent source, if you had to buy one book, you know, if anybody is interested in reading the truth about climate change, there's a great book written by a scientist named Gregory Wrightstone. Gregory Wrightstone. It's called Inconvenient Facts, the Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. Inconvenient Facts by Gregory Wrightstone. And it's a short book, but it will, and it has a lot of, it's got a lot of, you know, in-depth technical science, but it also has just a lot of common sense proofs, too. Basic facts. That, for example, that the polar bears are not on the verge of extinction. The polar bear population is actually larger than it has ever been, as is the case for all. In fact, it is so large we're not even sure how many of them there are now. That the moose and other Arctic wildlife, you know, they've never been more prosperous. The ice caps are not shrinking.
That is inconvenient.
Yeah, even though the you know, much was made about this enormous iceberg that sheared off Antarctica last year, a couple of years ago. But actually, the Arctic ice sheet is actually increasing in size, and the net ice, the net amount of fresh water locked up in the ice caps basically really hasn't changed significantly. The glaciers are not melting all over the world.
Oh, and the we learned from the guy that started Greenpeace that left them because they were too crazy when they wanted to ban chlorine, and he's like, "Oh, okay, I'm out." But he went on a tirade. Let's see, we had Dr. Moore on back in 2019, and he was telling us about the whole thing with the coral reefs are being bleached and all that, and that's all BS too. We've got to come right back here. We've got to take a quick break. I'm going to link that book, Gregory Wrightstone, Wrightstone, and apparently it was number one on Amazon for a period of time. I bet that was painful for them. So our guest today is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
If we had some global warming,
if we had some global warming,
it wouldn't be 20 below,
it wouldn't be 20 below.
If we had some global warming,
if we had some global warming,
I wouldn't be shoveling snow,
I wouldn't be shoveling that blasted snow.
If we had some global warming,
if we had some global warming.
I hate it when I get slighted by science. That's just so irritating.
So inconvenient. Hey, Gregory Wrightstone, just a little FYI here. I did a little quick look during the break. And inconvenientfacts.xyz is his website. He's got the book on there, and he also has a newsletter. And he's got an inconvenient app, which I'm sure is more convenient than the title. But he's got the inconvenient app. I'm like, oh, I think I'm going to become a groupie. He's got a blog, interviews, videos, climate chronicles. We need to get him on here. It sounds like that would be tons of fun. And, hey, just before we leave the global warming thing, we had a guy on a long time ago. I mean, like probably 9 years ago now. And I never forgot it because he was talking about the CO2. He was like a really just a regular guy. He was tons of fun. And came on and he said, you know, let me tell you about CO2. He goes, you know, in the air, or just all around where we breathe, it's like 400 parts per million. He goes, you know, when you do mouth-to-mouth resuscitation on somebody and you breathe into them, that's 40,000 parts per million. So if you're...
But how's it bring them back to life?
Exactly. So if it's toxic, I mean, if it's you know, poisonous or whatever, harmful, those people should have all died. And yet that was a perfectly acceptable, first aid treatment for many, many, many years. So there's a lot of this that's super inconvenient, and it's nice to point that out.
Well, CO2 is also plant food.
Well,
and
yes.
So you need it for plants, which generate oxygen to thrive. But moving on from global warming, let's talk about a real existential threat.
Yes.
You know, my EMP task force, we've put out a new report on titled Russia EMP Threat. And this is really the greatest threat to our civilization that we face right now, the greatest man-made threat, I think the greatest natural threat as well, since the sun can make an EMP that can destroy electric grids and all the life-sustaining critical infrastructures basically everywhere in the world, and putting billions of lives at risk. A primitive nation like Iran or North Korea or even terrorists, if they could get hold their hand on a nuclear weapon and loft it even in something as primitive as a weather balloon and get it up above 30 kilometers so that they could make an EMP attack over the eastern grid of the United States, if they could just do that, you know, primitive nuclear weapon lofted in a weather balloon 30 kilometers high, you know, it could black out the eastern electric grid, you know, for a year. And that alone would be enough to end us as a civilization, because most of the population of the United States lives on the eastern grid. 75% of our electricity is generated by the eastern grid. The western grid, you out in California, even though your grid might still be intact, you know, it would be like Rome being invaded by the barbarians, because people would be moving to trying to get to California, to Texas. Your scarce resources would be used trying to revive the eastern half of the country, you know, it would be a it would be a chaotic situation. And this is the astonishing thing. I mean, one would think that, well, you know, Washington has to be hit in the head with a 2x4 to be woken up, right? Well, we know that it takes even more than that. You know, because what is not being talked about anymore? It had been the biggest story, you know, around the, just before the holidays, the solar winds so-called hack, the solar winds hack. You know, when it happened, in fact, I think I was on your show even to talk about that, you know, because it was the biggest story around, just like these cyber attacks, these large-scale cyber attacks, every time they happen, they're the biggest story around, because for a short while, even the idiots who believe in climate change understand that this is a real threat. And, you know, we have been hit over the years. The cyber attacks are escalating in their sophistication, in the depth of their coverage, and their potential damage they can do. You know, this last one, you know, the administration admitted that, you know, hundreds of departments and agencies of the U.S. government had been penetrated. Now it turns out, including the Department of Defense, but the departments and agencies most responsible for our national security, like our nuclear weapons labs, even the critical infrastructure, and even the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, which is supposed to be protecting us from cyber warfare, even they were penetrated deeply and didn't even know about it for at least 9 months. So the bad guys were wandering around in the halls, in the cyber halls of the U.S. government and in the private sector areas. Hundreds of defense contractors and our defense industries that make our strategic and conventional weapons were penetrated. And Washington, as always, tries to put a base face on this by saying, well, it wasn't an act of war, you know, because it was an intelligence operation. They were gathering intelligence. But they actually don't know the extent of the damage. They were at least, at minimum, gathering intelligence. You know, it's highly likely that they were also inserting logic bombs and viruses and cyber weapons inside of our critical infrastructures and inside of our government agencies' control and communication systems, so that if we get into a World War III, they could just shut everything down. That's part of this new way of warfare that the Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans, the Iranians, they call it total information warfare or cyber warfare or electronic warfare. They have a lot of different names for it, but it all comes down to the same thing. You know, a coordinated attack using cyber weapons, that's the tip of the spear, you know, followed by non-nuclear EMP weapons and physical sabotage, small groups of special forces teams running around shooting up transformers and control systems, and then the ultimate cyber weapon in their book, the ultimate cyber weapon, is a nuclear EMP attack. They don't consider that a nuclear attack in their military doctrine.
Oh, you're kidding.
It's considered a cyber attack or an electronic warfare attack or an information warfare attack, just like a cyber weapon is considered. They consider it in that gray area. And actually, in terms of the physics, they're right, you know, because as I've explained on this show before, you know, an EMP attack is not like a Hiroshima Nagasaki type attack, you know, that involves blast, thermal effects, and radiation, radioactive fallout to create human casualties. You know, the bomb is detonated in outer space, you know, a minimum of 30 kilometers overhead. Could be as high, if they're going to put a field over the whole United States, it would be an altitude of 300 kilometers. But whether it's at 30 kilometers or 300 kilometers, if you were standing on the ground directly beneath the explosion, you wouldn't even hear it go off because it's going off in the vacuum of space. And there would be no radioactive fallout reaching the ground, no blast would reach the ground, you know, nothing would reach the ground except the EMP, which would pass harmlessly through your body because it's a radio wave. It's super energetic radio wave, and it would only destroy the electronics. And that's why in the military doctrines of our adversaries is not considered a nuclear attack, because none of the effects that we associate with nuclear war happen. Just this EMP, which doesn't happen when you detonate a weapon inside the atmosphere or on the ground, by the way. This kind of EMP you have to detonate the weapon out in outer space in order for it to happen. And I can explain why, but that's a little bit complicated to show without a blackboard, but I could try to explain it, by radio if you're interested enough.
Well, tell me this. Can't believe it. Oops. It's 1:45. What the heck? What's happening? Are you time traveling us? Your snowstorm and talking about climate hoax. I don't know. Maybe it just gets me all jacked up. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's 1:45. We've got to take a really quick break and then we'll be right back. But, you know, let's not gloss over the fact that all of these things are real national security issues, although nobody seems to be talking about them. And maybe consider what people can do, writing to their representatives or calling or whatever, if there's any component of that seems to make sense. When we come back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, you are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
So don't you late, act now, supplies are running out. Allow if you're still alive, 6 to 8 years to arrive. And if you follow the maid, be out tomorrow. But if the offer's shunned, you might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun.
So just out of curiosity, why do you think they want to rearrange all the foreign policy and make it about climate hoax rather than actual national security threats?
Well, I think it's a way of this has been part of the left's agenda for a long time.
That's true.
After the Soviet Union collapsed, socialism got a bad reputation for a long time. And a lot of the leaders of the left in the West became environmentalists and sort of changed their tune about justifying a great expansion of governmental power to get hold of the economy and control people's personal lives using environmental catastrophe as justification. When I was growing up, in fact, it was even going on during the 60s, before the collapse of the Soviet Union, there was this element in our Western society. The threat then wasn't global warming. It was the advent of a new ice age and or overpopulation. There was Paul Ehrlich's famous population bomb that published in the mid-60s, that predicted by the 1980s there would be cannibalism in the United States. President Nixon was written by the geology faculty, every member of the geology faculty in Brown University, you know, one of our Ivy League schools, wrote to Nixon warning that there would be a new ice age by the 1990s, and we basically needed to institute socialism and change our economic behavior, you know, because our industrial society and capitalism was basically responsible for bringing on the new ice age. So they've been using the environmental scare to try to justify socialism. And this is, now that socialism is back, they know it's not universally popular. And in addition to trying to re-educate us that freedom is evil, the free enterprise, free economic systems, and even, I guess, free political systems, that tolerate the views of people who listen to this radio show are basically evil, and that we need to be re-educated, we need to be woke, okay? But I think that they know that that's not enough, and so those people who can't be persuaded to socialism on its merits, need to be scared into it, by something like climate change. Every totalitarian movement has its boogeyman that it uses to do that. It was the evils of capitalism. Capitalism was the boogeyman, and the oppression of the masses, oppression of the common man and the working man. And they promised, that through class war and world revolution that eliminates capitalism, you could achieve a workers' paradise. For the Nazis, it was the international Jewish conspiracy that was the bane of mankind, and that by eliminating, the Jews and their allies, they could achieve an Aryan super race and purify the race and eliminate this noxious people, that were holding back, Germany's greatness, and were even responsible for Germany's defeat in World War I, according to the mythology. There's sort of a combination of these things in the modern, in the totalitarian movement that's sweeping through this country today, because that's what it is. It's a totalitarian movement. It's got all the earmarks of it, where they basically characterize their political adversaries as subhuman, as irrational, as not worth debating. We're now actually being defined as domestic violent extremists in the same camp as the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. You don't reason with terrorists, do you? You reprogram them if you can, and if you can't, you eliminate them. So climate change is compared to what they're actually thinking about and talking about doing now, is relatively benign, compared to the agenda that seems to be incubating in Washington right now, this fiction. The short answer to that is justification of socialism, justification of a revolutionary transformation of our society that departs from all the tenets of the Constitution and the values of Judeo-Christian civilization. And in order to justify doing that to people, you need some kind of an existential threat to warrant, people changing, all of us changing fundamentally the way we think, the way we behave, the way we live, and what we believe in, and giving up on the idea that society should be organized, that the individual, the free-thinking, free person who can make his own decisions, that that's the basis of the society, and replacing that concept with the idea that the state is God, and that we all belong to each other, which sounds nice, but what it really means is that you're not an individual. You're part of a collective, and the collective they have for us basically isn't even a collective. Isn't even an egalitarian collective as it was in traditional socialism, but it's a stratified collective that has a caste system in it where white people are basically on the bottom.
That's primary.
The lowest caste of all, and it doesn't even help you. You can't even work your way out of it by becoming a big lefty. It's just in your genes. And those who are on the the white privileged people who are leftists and are going to learn this. Joe Biden is going to learn this eventually when they get full power, if these people are able to implement. It's got all the earmarks too, a totalitarian type movement, because it's already getting ready to eat its own children. Totalitarian movements tend to do that You know, they've got all of these disparate groups that have helped them gain power, just like happened in the Bolshevik Revolution, or like has happened during the French Revolution, as happened when the Nazis took over. You know, all of them ended up having purges internal to the party, you know, to eliminate and consolidate behind one small number of elites right up at the top to consolidate their power. Mao Zedong in China, Stalin in the Soviet Union, Hitler in Nazi Germany. You know, all of them had their night of the long lot knives where they eliminated these people. And but that's not something, you know, not that I'm looking forward to that, because they eliminate the decent people first. Well, the decent people get eliminated all through the whole process, you know. But that's my long-winded answer to your question about why do they believe in this fiction. Same reason they believe in all the other fictions, too, by the way. I mean,
just a tool.
Yeah, it's all in George Orwell's Animal Farm. And in 1984, you know, part of, you've got to, in order to control people, you've got to be able to be in control of reality. Put quotes around that, you know, you've got to end up convincing them not to believe their eyes and not to believe their own brains, but to believe what they're told, okay, even if it seems to violate all logic and common sense, you know. And that's really the sinister thing. It's not just, we consider it silly, the idea that, oh, you know, 26 genders versus two biological races, right?
Well, and they spent most of the Trump administration yammering on about Russia, Russia, Russia.
Right.
And but that, here but Russia is really actually a problem, and we're talking about polar bears, you know.
Yes, right. You know, but if we take one of their most, one of the things that seems most laughable to us, the idea that, oh, there's, you know, 26 genders, and you know, obviously anyone with a brain, you know, everybody with a brain who has been around as long as we have had governments across all of written human history, you know, public policy or religion, if you want to call it that, you know, going back, you know, to the agricultural, and across all civilizations too, public policy is based on the fact of two biological races, not based on concepts of gender, okay?
Well, gender isn't an idea. It's, yeah, it's a provable biological fact.
You know, but that's what you need to do. You need to convince people that if you can convince people that even that
oh, I forgot. It's the top of the
legitimate.
Hour. Oh,
okay.
This is the moment where we get cut off. We don't get to, sorry, we don't get to run over. I forgot. It's top of the hour. All right, so we have news. And unfortunately, we have news. So you've got that. You've got 5 minutes to go do what you need to do. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Bry. You're listening to We the People at wethepeopleradio.us. Good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff.
Who's our sponsor, Bill?
Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery.
Huh.
Yeah, they're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Go up and see them. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And they have lots of tractors in stock right now. Go up and take a look at what they've got. They've got mowers. They got zero-turn mowers. They've got it all. So go up and see him or give him a call at 226-9226 or catch him on the web at papemachinery.com.
Be sure and plan for your generator since I'm sure PG&E will be shutting the power off.
Oh, yeah, lots. Summertime's coming. Usually that's a winter thing, but around here it's summertime. You're going to need a generator. So, yeah, they've got a nice line of Honda generators up there. They've got those in stock as well. So go up and get a deal.
Nice. So yeah, sorry about the unceremonious exit there, Dr. Pry.
Quite all right.
We'd been kind of running over our breaks, and it was kind of like, yeah, he's like flagging me from in there, like, yeah, we got a break. Well, yeah, whatever. Oh, yeah, this is the one where the news comes. Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. As a matter of fact, it kind of some part of the news that was relayed during the break Do you folks hear the news? I could hear it.
Yeah, we do.
Your audience. Oh, right, right. You know, it's actually fortuitous, and I think instructive to what we were talking about. You know, the administration, the new administration, this totalitarian movement and its proclivity to make public policy based on fiction and fantasy, you know, all because of political correctness and a belief system that just is disconnected from reality. There are so many things they have done during the first week of the Biden administration that it's hard to keep track of all of them, things that are profoundly damaging to our national security and to our society. And one of them was reported just now during the break, how the Biden, in fact, it's twofold. They were actually connected, that people listening to these things, you know, might pass right by them. But first, you know, they reported that the Biden administration is leaning on Saudi Arabia now over its human rights record. Okay. And it's also going to suspend aid to those who are combating the Houthis in Yemen, that we're basically pulling out financial support to try to stabilize the government of Yemen against the Houthis. And the larger story behind that is this is representing a sea change away from the Trump administration policies back to the bad old days of the Obama foreign policy, you know, because of, you know, basically leaning on Saudi Arabia is appeasing Iran. You know, Saudi Arabia is what we call a moderate Arab state, okay? And, you know, while I'm no big fan of the kingdom, and yes, the Saudis had, obviously there's a lot of Islamic radicalism percolating in Saudi Arabia, but at least the Saudis aren't overtly supporting global terrorist organizations the way Iran is, all right? And the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and so, you know, Trump was trying to organize a NATO alliance for the Middle East comprising Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and Egypt, and all the moderate Arab states, and Israel. And he actually succeeded in doing that, which is really a formula for bringing lasting peace to the Middle East, to have these states, these disparate states, united. But Iran is obviously against that, because Iran is the threat that unites all of them. And so this is signaling to Iran about criticizing Saudi Arabia's human rights records. Also, the Biden administration is thinking about canceling, you know, the $50 billion arms deal, you know, that we've got going to arm Saudi Arabia so that it can defend itself against Iran. So that's part of it. The other thing, obviously the newscaster didn't see these things as connected, but Yemen is on the border, it's on the southeastern border of Saudi Arabia. And the Saudis are trying to bring back a friendly government in Yemen so their southern flank isn't threatened. So by us basically not supporting the Saudis anymore in Yemen, you know, that we're going to pull out of our financial support out of Yemen, that's an even bigger signal to Iran, because the Houthis are proxies for Iran. They are armed for Iran. They're radical Islamist terrorists. They're in the next Al-Qaeda, and they have ballistic missiles. You know, most Americans don't hear about it, but almost every week the Houthis are launching ballistic missiles at the Saudi capital. They've actually killed the Saudi Air Force general a couple of years ago by striking one of the Saudi Arabian air bases. They killed the general of the Saudi Arabian Air Force that way. I mean, think about that. You know, here's a terrorist group that really practically owns Yemen, you know, because it's not like they're up in the hills or anything. They're really in control of Yemen right now. And so they've got a group that is as bad as the Taliban or as bad as Al-Qaeda, that controls a whole country, that's on the flank of one of our allies in the Middle East, and they have ballistic missiles. You know, if those guys got hold of a nuclear weapon, and they put one of those missiles on a freighter, they could attack us with an EMP attack. You know, technologically speaking, they're, except for the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, okay, they're the most advanced terrorist organization in the world technologically right now, and they have, and there are hundreds and thousands of them. You know, not they're not a relatively small group like Al Qaeda was, or even like ISIS. You know, there's hundreds of thousands of them, of these radicalized Houthis. So that's that story that we just heard, and so right in front of our ears, as it were. Mm-hmm. You know, we just heard another huge sea change in our foreign policy that's going to be very dangerous for our national security. A couple of other things that have happened that are fit in the category of being out of the fantasy world and are driven by left-wing ideology and not common sense. You know, as Biden has, during his first week, you know, he decided to renew the New START treaty. I think on our, your show in the past, we've talked about the New START treaty and how the Russians are almost certainly violating the New START treaty, just the way they are violating all the other arms control treaties that we have with them, and that this is among the most significant treaties, perhaps the single most significant strategic treaty as far as our national security is concerned, because the strategic weapons limited by New START are the weapons that can reach our homeland. And it is not acceptable for Russia to be cheating on the New START treaty and to have possibly twice as many nuclear weapons. We know their nuclear weapons are more sophisticated than our weapons already, you know, because we have not modernized our nuclear weapons. President Trump didn't have really time to do it. He had time to spend money and increase the budget, but it's going to take a decade, or more than a decade, really, to start trying to catch up to the Russians and to the Chinese, you know, in terms of the modernity of our nuclear delivery systems and our nuclear weapons. And the left is out there as soon as Biden did that. And Biden did also, in effect, by ratifying the New START Treaty and saying, yes, we're extending the New START Treaty for 5 years. He's basically forgiving them. And in a, and even under the tenets of international law, this can be used against us to say, well, since you did ratify, extend the New START Treaty, that means that you are okay with anything the Russians have done in terms of violating the New START Treaty, that you are implicitly recognizing that these violations are acceptable to you. And all the things that they clearly have done outside of the New START Treaty that are unacceptable, that threaten our national security, new kinds of nuclear weapons that aren't even covered by the New START Treaty. We're accepting all of that, you know. But rushing to Biden's defense now are, you know, idiots in the press who don't know anything, but are willing to, you know, are standing up and trying to convince us, you know, that it doesn't matter, that this is okay, okay? And, mm-hmm. and they're doing it, not necessarily addressing the New START Treaty directly, but, for example, in the national interest this past week, there was an article by the editor of National Interest, a guy named David Axe, and it just appalls me. I mean, the state of journalism, as an aside, I have to say that we have such people who are totally unqualified, you know, to be writing on these issues, you know. You know, David Axe, it was a cartoonist, okay, literally. His base background is a cartoonist. He never had any service in the defense or intelligence communities. You know, he doesn't have any academic credentials. Never took a strategic studies program course or anything.
Well, for heaven's sakes, they let Brian Williams be a news guy again. After he fictionalized how many different accounts and, I mean, that was...
Right, these people...
That was kind of one of those where you go, there's really no good explanation for that, how you could insert yourself into all those stories and now be considered a news guy.
An expert, yeah.
Got to take a really quick break. We're going to come back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and I hope you enjoy time traveling with us today, because... It's just going by so fast. It's very, very weird. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
You're a proud America. There's a
But, although people will say, you know, Dr. Pry, I'm sure you hear the same thing from people. People say they don't believe the media, but they listen to it and basically believe it. I don't know any other way to put that.
I think even skeptical, conservative, cautious people, when you're inundated, with the media, the left-wing view on the media, there's infiltration that happens, subtle infiltration, and you start making assumptions about things. You think there must be some truth in it. It can't be a complete lie, right?
Yeah, everybody wouldn't be telling the same thing if it was all a lie.
Right. And by slow degree, and since the left overwhelmingly dominates the media, and not just the news media, but even the cultural media, the thing you watch for entertainment, which is perhaps where the subtle brainwashing, is most effective. It starts shifting societal reflexes and attitudes on things. And there's been kind of a permanent thing on that. Before I get to this example, though, I wanted to complete my David Axe commentary about how now that Biden is made this folly, this dangerous decision to extend the New START treaty, that the left-wing media, not just the left-wing media, or journals even in newspapers that are considered respectable, like the National Interest is actually supposed to be moderate. I think it's a little bit, it leans left, okay, but it's not radical left or anything. David Axe is the editor of it, he and there's been a spate of articles out there by the media to justify what Biden did, implicitly justified, even though they don't mention Biden. They don't mention the New START Treaty. But there's an effort afoot to now convince people that the Russian nuclear threat isn't really a nuclear threat. For example, the David Axe article, he doesn't talk about New START or anything, but he's trying to say, oh, the hypersonic missile threat is really hyped. And he's just parodying the Union of Concerned Scientists. I think we've talked past in the show about how, one of the disadvantages we have in competing with totalitarian states and trying to defend ourselves against them is that we have the liberty of free speech, but it also becomes a dangerous burden to us, in the intellectual contest, in the internal conversation that happens in our society, because we are riddled with these left-wing, anti-nuclear, basically socialist groups that are serve as front operations for our enemies, okay? That Union of Concerned Scientists, the Federation of Concerned Scientists, Plowshares Organization, all of them are never critical of Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, never. They never criticize their nuclear threats. They are not a threat to humanity. Only not. It's only when we start trying to modernize our system. And so David Axe picks up and parrots the Union of Concerned Scientists, Plowshares line that the hypersonic weapon threat is grossly exaggerated by the Pentagon. The Pentagon is hysterical. The Pentagon doesn't know what it's talking about. I mean, how could anybody with common sense believe that stuff? But there are obviously a lot of people who do believe it because they subscribe and keep National Interest afloat. When they put out such irresponsible things. Of course the Pentagon knows more knows what it's talking about, and the Union of Concerned Scientists doesn't. If you look at the so-called scientists, the Union of Concerned Scientists, I can't remember his first name, it's somebody named Tracy. You know, he's some 20-year-old kid, you know, that union is probably is part of a college class project, you know, put together propaganda for the Union of Concerned Scientists trying to argue that the hypersonic weapons are being hyped as a threat, and they are not. They are absolutely, in fact, they make the EMP threat even more dangerous, you know, because these things can arrive faster than ICBMs can. They can elude our radar and our interceptors, and they operate at altitudes, you know, 50 to 100 kilometers. They're flying along the top of the atmosphere. That's kind of an optimum altitude for doing an EMP attack, which will also further decrease the arrival time if you don't have to re-enter the atmosphere. So that's just one example. There's another example. You know, this guy is even a bigger idiot. Russia's massively powerful nukes are strategic duds. That's the title of his article. Russia's massively powerful nukes are strategic duds. Written by somebody called Alex Hollings, who's got a master's degree in communications. I mean, that's his, you know, his expertise.
Wow.
The guy does, you know, he's obviously cribbed from Wikipedia, okay, to describe the Russian nuclear arsenal. I mean, and a lot of that is wrong in terms of the technical details, but he's trying to establish his expertise by putting out a lot of it, of this stuff. But why are Russia's massively powerful nukes strategic duds? Well, because everybody knows you can't use nuclear weapons, you know, that it would be the end of the world, so the Russians will never use nuclear weapons. And so the fact that they're building 100 megaton bombs and all these exotic nuclear weapons, we don't have to worry about
them. Oh, I feel better already.
Use them. Yeah, and everybody knows that, right? You know, yeah. And unfortunately, I mean, this is I mentioned this particular one because it's a good example of how if you repeat, even if it's a stupid, irrational opinion, but if you say it often enough and enough people seem to be saying it, can penetrate consciousness. And people who have to work for a living, who don't work in nuclear strategy or intelligence, national security for a living, most Americans probably accept that without even thinking about it too. That, yeah, there'll never be a nuclear war because mutual assured destruction is going to stop it, and nobody will ever use nuclear weapons. That's the premise that's the whole point of his article. And we have had lengthy discussions on this show about how that is untrue. And, you know, and history proves it is untrue. You know, if you go and the same arguments were made before World War I and before World War II. You know, the whole books were written. You know, before World War I, about how the machine gun and, you know, the size and power of modern armies, that you could mass military millions of men and transport them by railroads, and that a great war, like the kind of war they had in Napoleonic times, that if you had another war like that, it would be, you know, 10 times more damaging to Europe, and the economies would not survive. And because all the economies were linked, it would be, you know, a catastrophe for all nations. And therefore, there aren't going to be any more big wars like the Napoleonic Wars. That was actually a widely held view. There was a best-selling book called The Great Illusion, written by Norman Angell, you know, in 1910, you know, 4 years before World War I, that basically made that same argument. I mean, he was the Alex Holley of his day, you know, saying that all these weapons are so terrible and so destructive they would never be used. Well, he turned out to be wrong. The assessment was right that the weapons are so destructive that it would destroy European civilization practically, and it did. It killed a whole generation off. You know, but it didn't stop the war from coming. Because human nature doesn't change, and the way states think and behave doesn't change. The logic of military strategy doesn't change. And even with the example of World War I right in front of their eyes, you know, a generation later, you know, they were saying the same thing. Bombers, chemical weapons, you know, the experience of World War I proves that the technologies are even more destructive now, and it's going to be even worse. So even Hitler can't believe, you know, that he could win a World War II, or Tojo, Imperial Japan. And so there's going to be peace. We can negotiate. We can appease these people and get along and live together in peace, and there's not going to be war, but the war happened. And now they're saying the same thing about nuclear weapons. It's unthinkable they could be used. Well, the Russians and Chinese and North Koreans aren't building these things, you know, just to amuse themselves. You know, they obviously think that there's a big advantage in having them, and their military doctrines, plans, and exercise all show them using them in ways to win wars. So, you know, this is just another example of the kind of fantasy. This is a particular dangerous fantasy, though, because over decades of brainwashing our own people into believing that nuclear weapons are not usable in war, you know, most people still believe that, but it's a fantasy.
That no one's really going to do that. They think if everything is blow up the whole world, and I think what most people don't understand is nuclear weapons can be much more strategic than that. We were watching a thing, what was it called? It was called Spy something.
Spycraft.
It was a series on
Netflix.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll start the sentence. That's why we can't host this alone or sharing a brain. You got to have both of us in the same room or we can't complete a...
Yeah, that was a good show. It's a mini series. Talks about
let me hang in.
Talks about cyber attacks.
Talked about how they had these little nuclear weapons that they used. It was assassination. Was the segment on?
Oh yeah, with a little radioactive pellet that the Russians use.
Yeah, stabbed a guy with an umbrella in the back of the calf. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Bottom line is, if you decide to spy on these guys or try to get away from them. Good luck with that. You should watch the series first.
Yes.
You might want to just, learn to be happy where you are.
Yeah, the cyber warfare segment was very interesting.
It was super interesting.
A lot about what we just talked about.
Yeah, anyway.
And how they get away with it and how they do it.
A little plug there in case you wanted to learn more about that. So our guest is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. We will be right back with him. And you're listening to We the People Radio at wethepeopleradio.us.
At my party. Now don't talk to me about the polar bear. Don't talk to me about the ozone layer. Ain't so much of anything these days, even the air. They're running out of rhinos, what do I care? Let's hear it for the dolphin. Let's hear it for the trees. Ain't running out of nothing in my deep freeze. It's casual entertainment. We aim to be.
Lace-up boots and faded jeans, a homemade sandwich, a half a jug of tea. Average Joe, the average pay, the same old end, the same old day. But there's nothing wrong with a hard hat and a hammer. Kind of glue that sticks this world together. Hands of steel and cradle of the promised land. God bless the working man.
Play that for all the people who thought they were going to have jobs on the pipeline that they wrecked. Have you by chance seen that that Netflix series with all the spycraft stuff and the cyber warfare and that kind of thing?
No, I haven't.
It was like right up your alley. We were watching it last night. I thought, this is all the kind of stuff you talk about. It was kind of interesting for those of us who don't operate in that, you know, sphere all the time. It's amazing how those technologies can be, you know, used. I guess that's what most people think, you know, nuclear. Oh, yeah. They think of Three Mile Island. They think of Chernobyl and Hiroshima. I think that's.
I know. Mm-hmm. Isn't it amazing?
Uh-huh. I think that's probably the first top three.
Nagasaki, and we did use nuclear weapons. We did use them. We'd use them. And we are the most benign, morally sophisticated, just society that has ever existed in world history. And we used them. And we were right to use them, because when you do the calculus, and a calculus was done by our political and military leaders about whether it was the right thing to do, and they did, it saved millions of lives on both sides by doing it. But we did it. We used nuclear weapons. So those who think that a nuclear war can never happen, it will never happen, remember that. We used them. And we are basically the most benign society that has ever existed. So why do we think that totalitarian dictatorships like North Korea and China and Russia, or in Iran, with their ferocious ideologies, their leaders, bloody with the hands of their own people, and with the lives of Americans whenever they can kill them, why do we think they're going to be more restrained than we were during World War II? Anyway, it's puzzling. It's just an example, perhaps, of a fantasy where the left has managed to brainwash most people with its irrational perspective over the years. But also the point that you made earlier, Aaron, about, you know, the thing I worry about equally or even more is the fact that the weapons are strategic. Mm-hmm. And you can use, which means you can achieve victory in the geostrategic chess game, but the mere threat of their use, you know, the implication of their use, without actually blowing one up and having an actual nuclear war. You know, the greatest victory is to achieve victory without war. The way we did in the Cold War, we used them then, too. You know, we managed to defeat the Soviet Union, the evil empire, the most powerful totalitarian state that ever existed in history. We managed to win bloodlessly, you know, because of our nuclear weapons. We managed to contain them by maintaining the nuclear balance all through the Cold War, and then they imploded because of the internal contradictions of communism. And it was kind of a miracle that it happened, but it was a miracle that was backed up by good strategic thinking and the fact that we did not allow them to achieve any significant advantage in the nuclear balance. And now, my goodness, when I look at how the balance has shifted against us, it's really terrifying. And it's not going to get better. You know, I've oftentimes thought that the only thing standing between us and a nuclear holocaust is the aggressive personality of President Trump. You know, he was such a super patriot and so obviously aggressive that I think our adversaries were afraid of him, you know. And I was hoping that would buy us enough time to get our deterrent modernized. Now with Joe Biden at the helm, well, this is going to be an interesting experiment.
Yeah, we can call it interesting, I guess.
Right, like the Chinese, old Chinese saying, may you not live in interesting times.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of interesting things. Hey, tell me this, does it, because I may just be, you know, self-deluding, but I'm kind of excited to see all the Obama people come back just because they're a known quantity and they were pretty worthless when they were in before.
Oh, I get excited every time I see Jen Psaki do a news or a
hey,
press conference.
We'll circle back on that.
Okay,
it's my turn now.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
No, I mean, does that worry you or do you think that's actually kind of
a comforting?
Yeah.
Because it might be just a continuation of the Obama administration.
Yeah, getting nowhere. A whole lot of, a bunch of corruptocrats patting each other on the back.
It doesn't comfort me, you know, because
darn it.
because the far left is now the center of the Democrat Party.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
Their political base has moved so far to the left now. I mean, it's basically the Black Lives Matter Party. And these people are totalitarian personalities or robots. They have, you know, they are going to, I think they're going to do, Obama would have liked to have done the things that Black Lives Matter wants to do and that Antifa wants to do, okay? But he didn't have the political opportunity to do it because the party wasn't advanced enough yet in its thinking, wasn't woke enough yet in its thinking. There were still too many people, moderate view in that party. And but that's not the situation now. And they're just getting started. I mean, you have to judge them by their fruits. One of their fruits is the New START Treaty. They're obviously going to try to renew, you know, what we just talked about, how they're changing the foreign policy in the Middle East to appease Iran. I think that's the prelude to delivering on the promise to bring back the Iran nuclear deal, even though Iran probably already has nuclear weapons. You know, one of the first things that Biden did in his first week, curious that he would give such high priority to this, but he canceled President Trump's executive order on securing the bulk power system. You know, most people wouldn't even know about that. I mean, I know about that because it's right in the area of my national security concerns. Fortunately, he hasn't canceled the EMP executive order yet. You know, and I have heard, interestingly, that I have some connections to the Biden transition team and the like, and I'm being told, I mean, there are smoke signals that, you know, that they're not going to cancel the EMP executive order, which would be tremendously good news if that doesn't happen. And, you know, so maybe there's some hope there, okay? But they did cancel this other executive order, and, you know, it's an executive order that seems so far down in the technical weeds that you'd think nobody would notice it. Nobody except China, you know, because this executive order securing the bulk power system was basically signed late in the Trump administration. One of the recommendations that I and the EMP Commission and other, you know, experts on critical infrastructure security made, one of the recommendations we made was, you know, we shouldn't be buying transformers and SCADAs and equipment critical to our electric grid from China. You know, we've got to stop, you know, because they're doing cyber warfare against us. And they're allied with Russia. And, you know, the Chinese can be rigging these systems with back doors to make them more vulnerable to cyber attacks and more vulnerable to EMP, too. You know, we wouldn't buy our aircraft carriers or jet fighters from China. So why are we buying this stuff that it supports the lives of 330 million Americans from China? And that was the purpose of that executive order, so that we would buy American, you know, that these anything that's critical to our critical infrastructures and to the survival of the American people should be made in America. And that was the point of that executive order. And China Joe suspended that executive order. He's probably going to cancel it. Why would he do that? That's a strange thing. It makes one wonder about his Manchurian candidate status. Mm-hmm. You know, is this one of the first signs that this guy really does belong to China? Because I can't think of, obviously, the FERC and the NERC and the electric power lobbies, they didn't like the executive order, and I'm sure they were calling for its suspension. And they might have the power to get it suspended, but I shouldn't think that it would have been one of the first things the president would do. You know, they're not part of his political base. But maybe China is part of his political base.
Maybe. And, I'm not sure that's anymore.
So when he does things like that, the president of Jen Psaki, you know, gives me cold comfort. The other thing that sends a chill up my spine in terms of his priorities and in terms of what the coloration of this new administration is going to be, is it going to be pink or is it going to be red, okay, is one of his first acts as president, his cancellation of the 1776 Commission.
Yeah.
You know, just stood up by President Trump late in his administration, alas, too late. Cancellation of the great sin of the 1776 Commission is that it wants to teach an objective version of American history, you know, the kind of American history that we were taught when we were growing up, not a blind patriotism, but a balanced type. And if it is objective and fair and balanced, you do end up with patriotism because you appreciate how great this country is from its history. You see all of its flaws, but you also see how better, more than any other society on earth, it has provided in just society, struggled hard to overcome the imperfections, and has been better for more people than any other society ever has been on earth. And And President Biden doesn't want this taught to American children or in American universities. Instead, they want the 1619 Project to prevail. And critical race theory, which has also been, that executive order was canceled too, banning the teaching of critical race theory. So that's now also going to be taught everywhere. And, you know, which is basically a Marxist view of American history and of Americans.
Yeah,
we are.
How can that be a problem?
Right.
I think unfortunately we have almost two camps. You know, one side is panicked that we're getting rid of everything, and the other side says, "Oh, none of this is even real. This isn't really happening. And if it is, it's just a little, and it's not going to matter." I guess I would really encourage people to pay attention.
Yeah.
We did a show a few weeks back on the
1619, right?
Yeah, we did. He wrote it. The guy wrote a book called 1620. Really a well thought out guy. And so anyway, I hope you'll look at our archives. And in case the 1619 Project isn't familiar to you, if you have kids in school, it better be familiar to you, because that's not always part of the official curriculum. So if you're sitting on the school board and you think you can stop it there, he was pretty clear that a lot of that is being integrated at the classroom level. Got to take a really quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Bry. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
He's got the power and you're so weak, and your frustration will not let you speak. La 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 la.
They ever. Hey, just a little note on the webpage for today. I got Gregory Wrightstone. I've got his website on there, and also realclimatescience.com. Their .org must have expired, but their realclimatescience.com is on there. And their archives go back to January of 2015, so there is a ton of information on there. And so anyway, those two recommendations are duly noted, just in case you didn't have a pen when we talked about them last hour. All right, so Dr. Pry here in the final throes of our time together. Any thoughts on what people, besides getting informed, that's kind of a given, but beyond that, anything us just regular folks out here can be doing or should be doing?
Yeah, you regular folks can make all the difference. But before I get into that, I'd just like to make one more comment on why I don't take comfort from, you know, the return of the Obama administration people, which I think is also deliberate, meant to provide false comfort to people that there's going to be continuity. It's really, I don't see how any American can be deceived. Well, I guess self-deceit is easy. Look, on January 20th, I took a pilgrimage to Washington, okay? I just had to see it for myself.
Oh.
The occupation of the city of Washington by the U.S. Army. 25,000 troops, 2.5 divisions. More troops than we had in Washington during the American Civil War to protect it, supposedly, from an enemy within. I stood in the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue for 30 minutes outside the barriers that had concertina wire and gates, closing the entire Washington Mall area, not just a few buildings, the whole mall that includes the White House, the Capitol, all the monuments, everything where you couldn't get anywhere within sight of the inauguration, okay? Normally, you'd be dead in a couple of seconds if you were standing in the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue because of the traffic. But there was no traffic. There were no cars. There were almost no people on the sidewalks. Everybody was hiding inside their homes. The sidewalks were, the only people in evidence were soldiers everywhere. I saw one protester, some old guy on a bicycle, quickly rode up to the, pedaling furiously, you know, past the gates and shouted out that the election was stolen. And that was it. 25,000 troops to protect the Biden administration from that. You know, I think that the occupation of Washington is done because the Democrats know they stole the election. And they know, we know, they stole the election. And they are afraid that an outraged American people might do something on an even bigger scale than happened at the Capitol on January 6th. And that's why there's 25,000 troops in Washington and why they're going to stay there, you know, through March or until the future. But what can we do? Well, I think we need to take the long road and face reality that this isn't politics as usual, you know, that we have are facing a totalitarian takeover of our country, and we have to start organizing for a peaceful second American revolution. You know, I think when you say we are so used to expecting heroes in the Senate or President Trump or somebody else like him to come along, and we won't have to do it much of anything except support them, you know. But I think it's been proven, it should have been proven to us, that the system basically has reached a point, you know, where it's really profoundly broken. You know, the Republican Party can't be trusted and doesn't work. The court system doesn't work and doesn't uphold the law or even the Constitution. And in Washington itself, the culture there, anybody who's there, even President Trump wasn't competent to use the levers of power at his disposal to stop this from happening. So it's up from up. And frankly, he wasn't a good general. I mean, I know I'm going to anger some people, but we've talked before. You know, I thought he's a great man in terms of being a populist and a speaker and had vision. But he was too inexperienced and never learned how to use the levers of power. You know, President Trump is right. Winning is everything. Mm. And he was defeated and let himself to be defeated. They stole the election from him like taking candy from a baby. You know, it's up to us to organize. Shows like yours can become, you know, before the first American Revolution, there were these things called the Committees of Correspondence that were in operation for a decade before the first American Revolution, where people in the 13 colonies used these committees to communicate, to talk about what King George was doing, to lay plans. What should we do? You know, can we protest? Should we stay in Britain? Should we be preparing for a revolution? The American Revolution didn't just happen, you know, automatically. It was planned, you know, for a decade before it actually happened, and we were organized and ready for it. I think that we don't need a violent revolution, although if that becomes necessary, that's why there is a Second Amendment. I don't think that the current crowd of people are competent enough. They're so used to being obeyed. They have the illusion that they're in power, that Washington and that the levers of power available to them are concrete, you know, and that we will automatically obey what they say and follow the law because we're sheep. You know, the Declaration of Independence was absolutely right, that governments exist by the consent of the governed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's only because we consent to be governed that they have power. As soon as we choose to disobey, ultimately each of us as individuals, but as a group collectively, 75 million of us, choosing to disobey, they would not be able to handle that. They can't put millions of us in jail. We have to organize to the point where we can say something like, just as an example, we're not going to pay our income taxes. The 75 million of us aren't going to pay income taxes unless certain demands are met about having really free and fair elections that can be verified, you know, about really respecting the Constitution and people's gun rights and not trying to brainwash our kids in public schools. In fact, I'm going to pull my kids out. I have already done so, but speaking as an everyman, you know, one of the things people can do is pull their kids out of public school. They're getting brainwashed and they're getting lousy educations anyway. Any parent, you know, can do a better job educating their own children and passing on their values. And if you don't do that, your kids are going to grow up hating you and hating your values.
Yeah, because if the 1619 Project is the one that informs you on your American history, you're in really big trouble.
Right. And consider this. You know, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and all of that crowd, they are, when it comes to the science and art of totalitarianism, they are nothing compared to the leaders of the Soviet Union, the Warsaw Pact. Those were the most powerful, most advanced. They had turned enslaving people into a science.
Mm-hmm.
And they had instruments of power far more powerful than anything available to Washington. The KGB was far more effective and far more powerful than the FBI. And yet, when people lost faith in communism, and enough of the individuals living in those societies said, I'm not going to obey anymore.
Yeah.
My elites are corrupt.
The wheels come off the wagon. We're out of time yet again, Dr. Pry. We will have you back because we love chatting with you, and you're full of information, and I guess we're never full of good news, but at least it's factual, huh? So we're going to go with facts over just buoyant topics. How's that? We've got some good resources for you on the website, though. Inconvenient Facts and also the realclimatescience.com. Please go on there and check those out. Next week, voter fraud. And we're cutting into the news. I can hear it.